Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello everyone, it's Ewan McTeary here, host of the La Liga Lowdown podcast, and I'm here to introduce you to a special episode of the show. The La Liga season has been completed, so we held a live show via Periscope just after the end of the campaign to discuss all the big storylines from Spanish football this past year in what was the longest season in history. We went through our teams of the season, picked our coach of the season, reflected on the standout moments, we praised Granada, we criticised Barcelona and Valencia. We did a lot as I was joined by La Liga Lowdown's Paco Pollet, Roman de Arquer and Hassan Karim, with a couple of other special appearances along the way. So coming up just now is a replay of the entire live show. I hope you enjoy. Hello everybody and welcome along to our second La Liga Lowdown live. Thanks to everyone who tuned into our first show when we did that on June 11th, just when La Liga was returning from the coronavirus pause. We're having our second one now. Thanks for everyone who interacted as well over these last few weeks. We've completed the season. We didn't maybe always think we would, but we've completed the season, at least in the first division. We know that Real Madrid are champions. Barcelona, well, they didn't have the best restart. Sevilla, Atletico Madrid into the Champions League. Europa League, Granada, Euro Granada, that's the feel-good story of the season. And at the bottom, well, Espanyol, Real Mallorca, and Paco Pollet, as we'll find out, his beloved Leganés. He's now a Leganés fan. They went down too. Paco, of course, is also a Valencia fan, so it's not been good for him. So let's introduce the guests. Paco Pollet, of course, Roman de Arquer and Hassan Karim. I'm your host, Ewan McTeer. And before we get into the crisis talk about Valencia and Barcelona and Espanyol, let's start with a more feel-good, positive note. So Hassan, your Real Madrid have won the league. How excited are you that they're champions?
Oh, it's been a long season, a really long season. So now it's over and they've actually lifted the trophy. I'm delighted considering all the sort of narratives and storylines that have come along with it. So it's been a long season, but yeah, delighted to see it finally come good.
Yeah, we'll get into Barcelona and Valencia later, as I said. Be sure to comment along if you're watching live and let us know your thoughts on the season that we've just had. Paco, I'm not going to ask you specifically about Valencia just now, but what are your thoughts on the season being completed? Because for a long time, we weren't sure that we'd reach this point.
Hi, Ewan. Well, I'm glad that the season is over because it has been very, very demanding on absolutely everyone, the players, the clubs, the fan base who have been not able to attend those last 11 games live in the stadiums. And obviously for the teams that I support, Levante did a great job in the last run of games, but Valencia have been awful this season. So I don't really think this is going to be greatly remembered in a few years. So overall, very, very tiring and you know, everyone is always expecting it to end and to have a bit of rest and finally get some energy, positive energy back in the 2021 season.
And Roman, I guess there's not too much positive energy in Catalonia where Espanyol relegated Barcelona runners-up in the league, but were people at least happy to see football come back after 3 months off because of the coronavirus pandemic?
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it's been a long pause, especially here in Spain where we were confined for a long time, weren't capable of going outside. There was not much entertainment, so we missed La Liga, especially me. And it was good to have football back. Of course, it was sad that fans couldn't go to the stadium, as Paco mentioned. But at least we got that football. We got an exciting competition. It was game after game after game. And it was fun to get La Liga back.
Absolutely. So I mentioned some of the headline points of the season, Real Madrid being champions, of course, but let's have a bit more of a closer look just now at how the table finished up. We had Barcelona in second, and then Sevilla and Atletico tied on points, actually, which was quite interesting, but Atletico getting into third place for the eighth year in a row. So I'm going to ask each of you just now for one of the teams that really stands out to you, one of the teams that their final position kind of surprises you. Roman, can I start with you?
Yeah, sure. I was really impressed. I think everyone was really impressed with Granada. They've been a fantastic side this season. Getting to the European League positions was so unexpected after going up from Segunda División. I think many of us in the initial podcast thought they were going to be always near the bottom, but they were super impressive and they got to that position. And also credit to Real Sociedad and Valladolid, who for me were also very good this season.
And Paco, is there a team that stands out to you for good or bad reasons?
Well, Villarreal for good, obviously, because the way they desperately ran forward and charged towards that European places in the last 11 games was very, very impressive. And if I have to speak about the negative side of things, obviously Valencia with the fifth budget, the obligation of getting into European places for the Champions League or the Europa League and failing miserably to do that. Finally, ninth spot for them. It has been an awful season. And unfortunately, the people responsible for that weren't the players, it was the management.
And Haas, which place in the table catches your eye?
Getafe's finished in where they've ended up. Took me by surprise, considering we all expected them to get into Europe. Obviously, post lockdown, I think they lost that sense of momentum, which really did hurt them in the end. Of course, Espanyol as well, really, I think, sent shockwaves throughout the entire Spanish football, finishing dead bottom after finishing in European places only last season.
Yeah, absolutely. Espanyol, one of the shocks of the season, rock bottom. But let's move right to the top just now and have a bit of a deeper discussion about Real Madrid, who finished as champions, their 34th title. Now, Haas, you're a Real Madrid fan. Roman, you're a Barcelona fan. Paco, you're a mix of a Valencia or Leganés fan. So I'm going to come to you as the neutral in the room. How deserved was this league title for Real Madrid? They won by 5 points in the end. So were they worthy champions?
Did you notice Gareth Bale didn't take part in that little celebration? Well, I think it was absolutely well-deserved for Real Madrid. And I think Zinedine Zidane has been pretty reinforced by the way he has smartly managed the squad, rotating the players, giving them rest, getting them to be in top shape in this last run of 11 games. And I think that him in the bench, Ramos as a captain, legend, leader, scoring over 10 goals this season, Benzema in beast form the whole season. And also we should take into consideration Barca self-destroying themselves back in January when they decided to sack Valverde. And I think that was also a turning point in the season. From that point onward, yeah, Setién tried to, but wasn't able to keep up those standards. So Real Madrid took advantage and they deservedly won the league.
Yeah, and this weekend will be exactly 1 year since Real Madrid lost 7-3 to Atletico in that preseason game in New Jersey. It was pre-season, sure, but at the time, I don't think many expected Real Madrid to go on and win the title. As a Real Madrid fan, Haas, how surprising was the turnaround?
I mean, I actually had Atletico as my title favourites before the season kicked off. I thought they looked, on paper at least, a real solid outfit. And even through the season, Real were quite inconsistent for the first, I'd say, 2 to 3 months, up until about October time when they lost to Mallorca at San Mamés. It was tough. You know, there were murmurs of Zidane at the sack, Jose Mourinho coming back, which would have been a disaster, by the way. So for the turnaround then to come into the new year, looking defensively more solid than ever, I think it really was quite a surprising turnaround. I expected them to contend, but lift the title was something I wasn't expecting this season, and in such strong fashion as well.
Yeah, and if we look at the results that they had, a lot of zeros there, a lot of binary code kind of numbers for Real Madrid. They won quite a few games 1-0, kept a lot of clean sheets. That's one thing that Barcelona didn't have. Roman, what else did Barcelona lack that Real Madrid had?
Well, I think basically what Madrid had that Barca didn't have was squad depth. We saw how Madrid had so many attacking options. You know, they could play whoever they needed, because if one was injured, then you'd find another really quality striker or winger or whatever. And also, overall, the whole team, I think, was more compensated, whereas Barcelona, we saw that they struggled, especially at the end. The last match day, we saw that they had barely players to put on the bench because they had so many suspended and injured guys. So that's, I think, one of the key factors. And the other one I'd say is that Madrid had a good motivator. People say whether Zidane is good in terms of being a coach or not, but I think he's a fantastic motivator. I think nobody can doubt that. Whereas Setién or Valverde are very good technically and, you know, in terms of formations and tactics and all that. But when it comes to motivating, they don't have that special thing Zidane has, because Zidane just gets the 100% out of his players in every game.
Absolutely. I totally agree about the squad depth argument there. And that means there's lots of Real Madrid players to pick from when it comes to selecting an MVP for the season. So let's try to do that just now. Hass, I'll come to you first as a Real Madrid fan. Which player are you most grateful to for this title?
I think Ferland Mendy was a really important influence in that back line. You know, we all know what Marcelo is. He's, you know, he's an attacking fullback who definitely likes to get forward. Whereas Mendy's an assured presence at the back, and he really solidified that position, because often we see Ramos is usually compensating for Marcelo being somewhat up the pitch somewhere. So I think that was massive for solidifying that back line and making them the tightest back line in Europe.
And Paco, who are you picking? Do you agree with Hass there?
Yeah, well, I think Mendy did a very good season on his own, but I have to go with Thibaut Courtois. I think the keeper for Real Madrid has had his own vindication season. Once he came to Real Madrid last year, he didn't really step up to the challenge. But this year, he has been absolutely crucial in many, many games, with crucial saves, being, you know, that kind of solid keeper, being able to maintain an incredible number of clean sheets in the last run of games. So at the end of the day, having a good keeper is very important for any championship contender, and Real Madrid had it in the figure of Thibaut Courtois.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got a left back and a goalkeeper so far. Roman, who are you picking? Who is the Real Madrid MVP in your view?
I'm going for a more popular pick, I think, and that's Benzema, striker in this case. I think he was amazing this season. And the difference between Benzema and maybe Mendy or Courtois, I think, was the consistency, because Benzema, I think, was good from the first game right until the end. And he's been key in like 100% of this competition, I think, because he's not just scored goals, but he's also provided the goals. And he's just such an intelligent player upfield. Whereas, you know, other players like Courtois maybe didn't start as well, I think, although he ended fantastically. And Mendy didn't play all the games because Marcelo was also a starter in many games. So I think he maybe isn't my MVP, but Benzema definitely was incredible.
Yeah, if I'm picking, I'm going for Casemiro. I thought he was so important this season. But be sure to comment and let us know just how we're all so wrong, because none of us picked Sergio Ramos. So let us know who you think the MVP is, if it should be Ramos or any of the ones that we've picked just now. We're going to move on just now to the first of our crisis clubs. Roman, I'm afraid that's Barcelona. So can you just try and sum up how disappointing a season it was, if you can manage it?
Well, I'm going to give it a shot. It was definitely a very disappointing season for Barcelona. I think we expected much more, because we were fighting for three titles and now we've just got the Champions League. And it's very, very unlikely Barcelona win the Champions League. Let's be realistic here. I mean, we have Messi, all that, but just how the team has been playing all out through the whole season hasn't been good. The change in manager halfway hasn't been good either. And the board hasn't helped. So it's been a very chaotic season. And I think we hope for more, but this is what we deserve with all that's happened.
Well, let's reflect on that change in manager, because Paco mentioned already that he thinks the Valverde for Setién move was key. What were your thoughts on that at the time? And what are your thoughts on that coaching change switch now?
Well, even if the stats say that their points were similar between Valverde and Setién, actually Setién got two more points than Valverde in his run, I think that it was a wrong move, definitely wrong move, because of the way it moved too much, the way it was some kind of tremor inside the club. Nobody expected such a change in January after that Super Cup in Arabia. And I think it really didn't allow Barca to shine, because Setién, at least on paper, had one play style, but when he tried to execute it, it really didn't come to fruition. So I think Valverde with time will be better liked by some of the fans, because I think he did a decent job in Barca. And I think Setién didn't live up to the standards he had generated before his arrival.
Yeah, Roman, will Valverde's reputation improve in your view over time?
Well, I don't think so, because, I mean, Valverde already did his job here. we saw that the team in more over 2 years didn't really improve in terms of the way they were playing. And I think in Barcelona, we want something more in that sense. And Kike hasn't been capable yet. We don't know if he'll have time to do so. But I think the change wasn't right in terms of the timing, basically. It should have happened either before the season started or at the end, not in between. That was the mistake.
Yeah, very weird. Barcelona don't usually do that, do they, changing coach midway through the season? But they did it this year and it didn't quite work out. Let's go on to some of the juicy stuff now, because there's been so much off the pitch drama at Barcelona. It's been like a weekly soap opera this season. So I want you to all give me your standout moment of off the pitch drama at Barcelona from the season. Haas, as a Real Madrid fan, I'm sure you enjoyed it. Can I come to you first? What moment?
Oh yeah. I loved every second of it. I think the standout point, when it kind of really showed their lack of self-respect for themselves as a club, was when they were chasing Neymar, who's openly, for you know, lack of a better word, had their pants down in public numerous times. So, I mean, he sued them. He's played. I mean, he left him in pretty disgraceful circumstances anyway, just ditched him and bounced because he wasn't getting that sort of limelight that he wanted. So the fact they were able to chase him openly, it just shows poor planning as well, the poor planning that's been culminating over years. And I feel like finally exploded this season and came back to bite.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you're trolling there, Haas, but I think you actually also believe every word you just said, which...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Paco, what would you pick watching on? What moment really stood out for you?
I have to go with the social media mess, you know, the i3 Ventures controversy, which I explained very quickly. You know, fans should know that allegedly Barca's board were spying on some of the opposition of people who didn't like the board and stuff. Okay, and apparently, allegedly... they paid for some kind of, you know, social media reputation agency in order to improve the reputation of Bartomeu on the board. So everything exploded. It seemed that all of the information got leaked and, you know, Barca's board were left in the ground and looking awful to the eyes of the fan base. So I think that whole mess and whole drama with Piqué calling people titella, with like puppets, some of the people surrounding the club, I think that was incredible for football fans, obviously awful for Barca fans.
Yeah, I'm sure you thought that, Roman. What moment stood out to you? Any other moments that you wish didn't happen off the pitch this season?
Well, as Haas was saying, I think the planning was absolutely terrible, especially in that winter market where they decided to bet on Dembélé and then he got injured and then we had no striker and then we had to sign Braithwaite and all that dilemma kind of exploded. And that was disastrous. And Erika Vidal, in this sense, has done a pretty terrible job. And all this bad handling and bad dealing has led Barcelona to have to make dodgy deals, we could say, with, for example, Juventus, where you're paying a certain amount for Pjanic and sending Arthur there, which is just crazy. And this could be really harmful in the future because they have to amortize all that money. But, I mean, that's what Bartomeu is all about, messing it up.
Yeah, I love your insight, as always, Roman, hitting the nail on the head. But you actually spoke to some other Barcelona fans around the city to see what they think from the season. So we're going to hear from some of them now, some other disgruntled Barcelona fans.
There's like five or six players in Barcelona who just have been winning everything year after year, season after season. And I think those guys who are all of them like over 30 years old, I think they have like too much power inside the club, inside the team. In Spain and in Barcelona, we call them vacas sagradas. That means sacred cows, like in India. So I really think those players like should not be playing in Barcelona anymore.
Mo Messi acted as a captain. He said what he needed to say. He's the captain, he has to say these words. People say like are amazed by his words, but it's just with the job of the captain. If he didn't do that, I would be deceived. I like Quique Setién. He was put in the spotlight. He came in a very difficult position in the middle of the league with a team that was about to fall into a crisis. And he's trying to put his game, his style, but there's obviously a lot of pressure. We lost the league, but I trust in Quique Setién.
I really think Barcelona needs a coach who can really become a leader, who has like a great personality and a lot of charisma. You know, someone maybe like Guardiola, or maybe someone like Luis Enrique or Jurgen Klopp, you know? Someone who says, I'm here, I'm the leader, and if we have to go through hell, we'll go. They've been spending a lot of money signing up for players who have not been good enough. I also believe that the management of the club is not good enough, for example, with Abidal. I think he's not the proper manager for a club as Barcelona.
They're doing things very bad. Their signings are very bad, and there's not been like good communication with the team. There's always been like a lot of differences, and I don't know. I don't like them. I think they should leave.
So the Barcelona fans not very happy there, understandably so, I think. We're going to move on to our next crisis club now, which is, I'm sorry, this time it's your turn, Paco. It's Valencia. They didn't qualify for Europe. Just how serious and significant is that financially and maybe as well in terms of attracting players?
Well, it's a very big blow financially because it forces the club to sell around 50, 60 million euros in players this summer. And, you know, we saw it coming. I think it's nothing shocking for the fans because we absolutely saw it coming since September when Marcelino was sacked and later Matteo Alemany followed suit. The decision-making has been appalling the whole season, and we could also pinpoint last summer when everything started. So I think it's a very big disappointment that ninth place isn't really the place where Valencia should be. But at the end of the day, the players, in my view, they did what they absolutely could and tried their best, but too many wrongdoings within the management will take you to that position, to the ninth place.
Yeah, the Marcelino sacking, I think, was key. Albert Celades came in. Was he kind of doomed to fail? Could anybody have come in and turned this into a good Valencia season?
Well, I think that it wasn't his fault, you know. I think he wasn't ready at this point in his career to become the caretaker for Valencia, to try to turn things around. Players did their absolute best to keep that Marcelino momentum going since the Copa del Rey final. And you could see the team trying their hardest, and they actually did quite well in the first 3-4 months until that game in Amsterdam against Ajax. They won the game. They moved into the last 16 round in Champions League. But after Christmas, that momentum was over and it all fell apart because the team physically was very, very tired. And as Celades tried to get in his normal playstyle, things had to fall apart at some point.
Yeah, they were especially poor after the restart from the coronavirus pause. Haas, as a Real Madrid fan who saw your team win 10 in a row straight after the break, what kind of differences did you see between Real Madrid coming back so strong and Valencia so poor?
It's stability. It's all instability, isn't it? And it's something that Valencia have lacked for some time now. And I think actually after a bit that weighs on your mental state. And I think the players have essentially thought all this chaos is surrounding us. Some of them actually have uncertainty around their futures. I mean, we saw the story come out a couple of weeks ago where a few players were warned literally hours before playing that they had no future at the club and would be sold. It's just conditions that mentally I don't see how you keep yourself focused and in shape in that sense.
Now, Roman, I'm going to propose a trade for you. We know Valencia's boardroom problems are pretty bad as well. Would you trade Barcelona's boardroom problems for Valencia's?
Definitely not.
Of course not.
There's no doubt here. I mean, of course, Barca have been terrible, and I insist. The board is a shambles. But at the same time, when you look at Valencia, it's like every time things seem to be going right, like when they won the Copa del Rey or whatever, another bomb just comes out of nowhere and bashes everything, and it's back to the drama, back to the chaos, back to the problem. So if I had to pick, I would still stick with Barcelona, even though I don't like saying that.
No, fair enough. We'll move on now to our third crisis club, quite a few of them this season, and that's Espanyol. They finished rock bottom. They got relegated for the first time in 27 years. And I don't know, Paco, did we maybe see this coming? Because remember last summer, they lost Ruby the coach. He moved to Betis. They lost Borja Iglesias. He went with them. Did we maybe see the signs of this in the summer?
Possibly so, but again, every time a mid-tier club tries to play La Liga, play Copa del Rey, and also compete in Europe, I think they find themselves in trouble. Obviously, Borja Iglesias leaving for Real Betis, and also Rubí, the manager, leaving for the green and white team was a big blow for them, but I think many things went wrong. For example, picking David Gallego, he wasn't fit for the job, and you could see it from the get-go. And also, that momentum beginning the season so awfully was very, very difficult to turn around. They tried in January with some big signings, and Barba, Raúl de Tomás, but it wasn't enough. I think they were doomed to failure from the get-go, and I wouldn't only fault or put blame upon Rubí and Borja Iglesias leaving.
Yeah, Roman, they really tried to fix it in January with those signings, and they tried to fix it throughout the season by changing the coach. Why didn't those mid-season changes work?
Well, it's a good question, because usually when a new coach comes in, there's like, you know, that boost, that motivation you get. And we really did feel it with Martinez, the first few games maybe, but then we saw that his formation just wasn't working. The 3-5-2 wasn't for Espanyol, and he was just, you know, too closed-minded in that sense and wanted to implement that style. And then I think with Abelardo, there was a change. They were playing much better. It was all looking good. But in the end, again, I don't know what happened in this case, because I thought Espanyol could save themselves with Abelardo. But overall, I do think it was a problem in terms of squad depth, because at the beginning of the season, with the team they had, it looked good to play La Liga and Copa del Rey. But if you add Europa League to that, where they have to play game after game and they were trying to win those games, then it makes it a lot harder. So I think Espanyol were really partially condemned to go for relegation.
Yeah, I think that's a good point about the Europa League, because they didn't seem prepared for it. Haas, you saw them actually in the Europa League when they played Wolves. What did you make of the Europa League as an extra commitment for Espanyol? And is this maybe a cautionary tale for Granada, who are now into it for next season?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a story we see so many times, you know, how many times over we've seen it. We see a club that usually don't find themselves in those European positions with that extra burden. They're not able to adequately get the depth that they need. I mean, with the game against Wolves, you saw the depth and quality was massive. Whilst they had, you know, they have their own stars in, you know, in their own right, you know, with Mark Rocco, you know, Raul de Tomas, who actually didn't feature for them in that game. And then you compare that with Wolves, and they've got Adama Traore, Raul Jimenez, Ruben Neves, João Moutinho. They've got a Euro-winning goalkeeper in goal, and Rui Patricio. They've got all these options. And Espanyol, they do have a good budget. We know that. They've got one of the bigger budgets in the league. I just don't think they spent it adequately. And then in January, I feel like what they did was they threw as much as they could at the wall, hoping something would stick. Ultimately, that didn't happen. So as a result, you know, you find yourself in that position. And again, linking kind of back to the point of Valencia, instability again, because there's constant chopping and changing of coaches. Naturally, that's always going to wear on you, because it's like, okay, new style, new approach. Just you can't get used to that in such a short space of time.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're looking for someone to lead the project again as they go down to Segunda. We've got Cadiz and Huesca coming back up, which is quite exciting for next season. Huesca have done a bounce back promotion. They just got relegated, remember, this time last year. Or not really, because it was May last year. They've come straight back up. So we've got Espanyol, Real Mallorca and Leganés going down. Guys, which of these three teams do you think is best equipped to do a Huesca and come straight back up? I'll come to you first, Roman.
Well, I'm going to go for Espanyol, I think, because this is the fifth time they go down to Segunda, and they're used to being in Primera División. And as a matter of fact, every time they've gone down, they've bounced back up to Primera. So I think that could happen once again. They also have the financial backup from the Chinese president, Chen. He's going to make sure Espanyol get the players they need. They have a good competitive squad to try and fight and get back to the competition. But of course, until we don't see those final squads, it's going to be very hard to predict. But if I had to pick one right now, I'll go for Espanyol.
Paco, who are you going for?
Well, I would love to say Leganés, because their kids are beautiful. But I have to go with Roman. I think Haas pointed out earlier the budget issue with Espanyol. They were the ninth budget this season, the 1920 season in La Liga. And this means that even though they go down to Segunda, they will have one of the biggest budgets of the whole competition. And that will help them to rebuild properly. I think in Segunda División, it's very easy to build a competitive team by, you know, straight up splurging cash around and getting a very strong side. So I think they're going to be the best equipped side to bounce back and get promoted once again to Primera next season.
What about you, Haas? Are you agreeing with the guys and going for Espanyol as well?
No, I'm feeling Mallorca. I am still feeling Mallorca. You know, I think they're a good outfit. They've definitely got the pieces to come straight back up. And we've seen this season. It can be an exciting time. You know, they can be an exciting side, you know, when things go their way. And when their back's against the wall, they always seem to really come out swinging. So I think that's a side that definitely could step up.
Yeah, let's talk a bit more about Real Mallorca now. All season long, we've had Alex Fitzpatrick on the island telling us what's been going on there on our podcasts and videos. And he gives us a bit of an update just now, explaining basically what went wrong and why Real Mallorca went straight back down.
It's been a brave and hard-fought season for Mallorca, but one that has ended in relegation. started the year with the lowest budget in the division, and a double promotion meant that they still had a squad that featured many players from the Segunda B and the rest from the Segunda. In fact, only two signings that they made, and they made many, ended up playing a substantial amount of games regularly each week. Takefusa Kubo on loan and Cucho Hernandez also on loan. The highs undoubtedly were the victories at Son Marsh over Real Madrid, Valencia and Villarreal, and the lows, of course, the away form. After the lockdown, they struggled to get going. They drew a crunch game at home against Leganés, which made a tough job to stay up even harder. They had a resounding victory over Celta Vigo, 5-1 at Son Marsh, which looked to get them back on track. But the away form meant they couldn't ever get any momentum going. They had a tough run in those final 11 games, playing all of the top five. So five of their 11 games were against the top five sides, ultimately falling short in their survival bid in the defeat against Granada on Thursday night.
Well, let's hope that Real Mallorca can bounce back up soon, quicker than it was last time they went down. Same goes, of course, for Espanyol and Leganés.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Let's fly back up to the top, or the top-ish of the table just now, and have a look at the European qualification picture. So I don't think there's any surprise that Real Madrid, Barcelona and Atletico Madrid all made it into the Champions League, but Sevilla doing so, and doing so so closely to Atletico Madrid, that maybe caught a few by surprise there, back in the Champions League after 3 years. As you saw how it didn't work for Julen Lopetegui at Real Madrid, are you surprised by how well it worked for him his first year at Sevilla?
No, I think he stepped into a project that is stable. I mean, the job that he stepped into at Real Madrid was probably something that no manager wanted to step into a post-Ronaldo era, post-Zidane era in Madrid. So I think anyone that stepped into that position was doomed to fail. So I think now he's got a stable project in Sevilla. You know, he's got Monchi behind him. He's built himself a really tidy squad. I'm not surprised at all that he's done so well. If anything, I think he probably could have finished higher had he had the same momentum post-lockdown. But he definitely did well this season, and the results show that.
Yeah, there was so close to even finishing third ahead of Atletico Madrid. But Atletico Madrid, for the eighth year in a row, into the top three. Roman, we heard Diego Simeone earlier in the season say that it was a transition year. He got a lot of criticism for that. I personally agreed with that. He lost half of his starters in the summer. So how do you evaluate Atletico's season? Do you give it more credit because it was a transition year and they still finished third? Or do you think they could have done more?
Well, at the beginning of the season, I think a lot of people thought that Atletico Madrid could actually win the title, as Haas pointed out before. There were lots of fans who were actually saying that Atletico had a great squad, because if you look at the team individually, player by player, I mean, it's a really, really good team. One of the best Atletico, I think, have had. But of course, it's a lot of new players coming in. So they all have to adapt to Cholo's system, to Cholo's style. And that obviously takes time. That's not easy. So I can partially understand that it was a step, you know, in the way, and he has to adapt and train his players to learn all the key things at Atletico. So in that sense, I do think that he's right. But he did get the break, and I think after the break, Atletico came stronger. So I think the players, you know, got to get his ideas quite well. And now they have the Champions League where they threw already to the next round. And, you know, that's an advantage they have. And they could even surprise us by winning that competition. And everyone would say that what an incredible season Atletico's had. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah, we'll see. And the Europa League now, let's have a look at this one. Villarreal finishing in fifth, Real Sociedad in sixth. And then Granada, Euro Granada, we have to call them now, in seventh. An incredible achievement for the newly promoted side. Paco, they finished seventh and that meant they get into Europa League. Can you just quickly explain to us why seventh meant Europa League qualification this year?
Yeah, of course, everyone knows that the Copa del Rey winner gets one of those tickets for the Europa League competition next season. But in this case, this season, due to the coronavirus outbreak, both Athletic de Bilbao and Real Sociedad had to play that final and it had to be postponed. Okay, so they had two choices. The first one to play that final behind closed doors before August 15th, and whoever was to win it, that team would go to the Europa League next season. But the second choice was playing the game, playing that final, but with their own fan bases inside the stadium whenever it's safe. And that would have to be forcibly later on this year, 2020, or even we'll move on to 2021. So both clubs decided to do the latter, okay? They decided to play with their own fans because they wanted that excitement, the atmosphere of having a Basque derby in the final. So they gave up on the possibility of moving on to Europe in that sense. So La Liga, in turn, decided that the seventh would go on to the Europa League and they will have to play several playoff rounds before being a proper Europa League team.
Yeah, and Real Sociedad, it didn't really matter for them because they got in anyway. And you've got Europa League football coming back to where you are, the Valencian community. Sadly, not at Mestalla, I'm afraid to say. But at Villarreal, how impressed were you with the way they performed after the restart? Because when the coronavirus pause came about, I don't think many people expected Villarreal to get into Europe.
Well, I was very, very impressed, as I believe most of Spanish football should be, because Villarreal have been the most impressive side after the break. If you leave apart Real Madrid and Atletico de Madrid, I think that suddenly everything clicked. Villarreal, Santi Cazorla has been masterful the whole season, and he did also his own thing in the last 11 games with goals, with assists, being an all-around midfielder who was able to move the team and win games on his own. And I think that both him, Gerard Moreno scoring, Tham Wangisa in the midfield, he has been a breakout star for Villarreal. And also, we have to talk about him, Javi Calleja. He was not in the best position once the break came along, but and that's why Villarreal contacted Unai Emery, who is going to be Villarreal's next manager. He should be officially announced in the next few hours, in the next few days. But I think Javi Calleja has vindicated his position in the bench and he did a very good job. So I hope he has another project in line because he deserves that shot of managing a club in La Liga.
Yeah, a good achievement in the end. Villarreal firing into Europa League, coming in with lots of momentum. The opposite is true, really, for Real Sociedad. They clung on in the end. Only three match days all season were they outside the European qualification spots, but on the final day they were outside for quite a bit, but they managed to sneak in at the end. Haas, it would have been a big shame for Real Sociedad if they had missed out because they have been so good all season. And do you think there's maybe even a sense of disappointment there because for a while it looked like they could get Champions League?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was tough for them to take. I think it's having to split and settle for the Europa League since they were in that Champions League spot for predominantly most of the season. And I think like Getafe, they suffered from the post-lockdown loss of momentum. It was hard to keep that groove going when you have that such a significant break. Obviously, fitness and stuff was affected. And naturally, I think their squad struggled with the fact that they weren't as fit as they were prior to the restart. But they're still in Europe, which is still a fantastic achievement for them and for their squad and for the coach as well, I think. Overall, it's been a strong season for them. Ultimately, somewhat disappointing, but they definitely can take some praise for that.
Yeah, definitely. And then let's dwell a bit on Granada now. What really struck me looking at this was they started so well. They won three in a row early on. After that, they never again won more than two in a row. So it's not like Granada had a purple patch that propelled them to the Europa League. They were just, I don't know, I don't really know how they did it. Paco, can you help me out? How did Granada do this?
Well, you already said it, that they didn't have that kind of impressive run of stringing a few wins here and there and suddenly becoming the best thing in the league. But I think consistency has been crucial this season for them, because remember, back in match day 10, they were top of the league after beating Real Betis 1-0. And after that game, everyone realized they weren't a fluke, and they haven't really get out of the race at any point. There was a few games here and there back in January, in February, where they suddenly weren't in the same form. But I think that kind of consistency with Soldado in front, with the Carlos Fernandez, many players, Duarte at the back, you know, I also the manager, I have to speak about the manager, Diego Martinez, in my view, coach of the season. He has done an amazing job with the just promoted side. So I think we should deservedly praise properly what Granada have done, because I think it will be remembered in a few years' time.
Yeah, and we'll absolutely praise the coaching staff there at Granada in a little bit when we discuss our picks for coach of the season. But now let's discuss some of the players, some of the key names of the season. We've already seen the objective awards. We know who's won each of them. No surprise that Messi has once again won the Pichichi. That's his seventh of his career, which means he now overtakes Telmo Zarra, who had six during his career. And Zara, remember, he was a player in the 40s and 50s for Athletic Club, and he was so good that they named an award after him as well, the Zara Award, which goes out every season to the top-scoring Spaniard. And this year, for the first time, after a three-year Iago Aspas run, Gerard Moreno wins this one with his 18 goals. And then another of the awards, the Assists Award, it goes to Messi as well. This is the first time a player scored 20-plus goals in a La Liga season and had 20 plus assists. Messi getting 21 there and overtaking Xavi, who previously had the record for assists in a La Liga season. So Messi, even if we say this may have been a quiet year for him, he's still been so good. And in the goalkeeping award in Spain, we have the Zamora Award, which goes to the goalkeeper who had the best numbers on average in terms of keeping goals out. And Thibaut Courtois wins it, 0.59 goals conceded per game. And that's his third Zamora Award. And his numbers this year, even better than when he won it twice with Atletico Madrid back in the day. Roman, Messi won the Pichichi Top Assister. He's won the Objective Awards, but was he, once again, the best player in the La Liga season if you look at the eye test?
Well, I mean, I know a lot of people would pick Benzema, for example, over Messi. But when Messi's in La Liga, I have to go with him because, I mean, he's still an amazing player. He's broken the stat you commented. I mean, he has 25 goals and 21 assists. That's a total of 46 contributions for Barca's 86 goals. I mean, that's incredible. It's more than half of them, you know. So Messi's just fundamental. And despite Barca not being great, he was the one pulling the team. He was the one sustaining Barcelona near Madrid until the end, where he couldn't do any more. But it's always down to Messi. So I think as long as he's in La Liga and as long as he's playing at this level, he's going to be my MVP season after season.
Yeah, as Roman said, some people might pick Benzema. You already told us that your player of the season for Real Madrid is Mondi, but some people will pick Benzema. Are they right to do so? Because he was pretty good as well this year.
Oh yeah, it's sensational. I mean, he led the scoring charts for Real Madrid, led the assist charts. And if you look deeper into it, I think he actually led the way for chances created and all those sorts of juicy stats. So in terms of leading from the front, you can't really ignore that. And then even beyond that, he won the most points of any player in the league, had the most goals against the top teams in the league also. So a phenomenal season for me. Really shouldered that burden considering the injuries to Eden Hazard, the lack of substance from Luka Jovic. He really did pick that offence up, which is still moderately weak in comparison to what Madrid has had in the past, and quite literally dragged it along.
Yeah, and Paco, as our non-Real Madrid or Barcelona person in the room, are you picking someone from those teams for your league MVP, or who are you going for?
Well, I think that both players have done amazing this season, but I believe their picking them is too mainstream for my taste. So I have to go with a third wheel, third choice, third option. I have to go with Lucas Ocampos. You know, I didn't really know the player. I knew he played in the French league. I hadn't seen him really. And I think he has done many things brilliantly this season, even being, you know, goalkeeper for Sevilla and saving a crucial shot for them in one of those last games. He has played 33 games this season, scored 14 goals, 3 assists. He has played absolutely everything and did it brilliantly. So I think he deserves the praise, and he deserves to be right up there in the group of 2, 3, 4 most important players this season.
Yeah, Ocampos maybe the hipster pick of the season, but I buy it. I buy everything you said. Has we've spoken about Courtois, he won the Zamora, but was he actually the best goalkeeper in the league this season? Was he actually better than Ter Stegen, Oblak, and even Ocampos?
I think he definitely was a standout, but there's other names out there that definitely do stand out also. I mean, you had Aito Fernandez and Unai Simón, who really did stand out. Simón particularly, I'd like to highlight, because I think without him, Athletic Club wouldn't have had as solid a defence as they did, because he did bail them out at times. I mean, you see they're conceding under a goal a game. It's just, it's incredible. And he was a real standout for them this season. So I'd say I'd probably go with Unai Simón if that's the big one.
No, definitely, definitely a good pick. Now, I want to get your idea, Paco, on the young player of the season, because I know you're always looking ahead to the future, the players coming through. Who was the best under 21 in La Liga this year?
Well, I know many people will go for Odegaard, but if I have to speak about an under 21 player, I would go for Ferran Torres, okay? But not really the whole season. I believe the first half of season for him was massive, and I think that's the reason for teams such as Manchester City to try to make a move for him this summer, because he's so young, so talented, so unstoppable in one versus one on the wing. He knows how to score, how to dribble. He has the physique. I think he's going to be a great player in the future. But if I have to speak about the younger player who has impressed me the most, I have to go with Carlos Fernandez. He's 24, though. He doesn't fit your description, but between Ferran and Carlos Fernandez, Sevilla player, played for Granada this season on loan, he has been massive, and he has been crucial for his team getting into that seventh place and playing next season's European competitions.
Yeah, a bit too old for my description, but I'll give you, Carlos Fernandez has been great. Roman, can you give us an older player of the season, someone over the age of 35? And you're not allowed to pick Carlos Fernandez for this one.
Okay, you're making it hard for me. Nah, it's easy. I have to go for Santi Cazorla. I think he's been incredible this year. There were lots of doubts. We didn't know whether he was going to be at top shape, you know, because he's coming from a really, really hard injury. And he went past that. He got past all those injury problems, and he proved that he still has plenty of quality in his boots. And as you can see in the graphic, you know, he got 9 assists. He's been key for Villarreal. They made it to Europa League in big part thanks to Santi Cazorla. So I think he's definitely the best older player over 35 in this season, no doubt.
No, I'll give you that one as well. Definitely agree with what you said there, Roman. I want to get then your teams of the season. We'll get into the juicy stuff. Paco, let's go for you first. Can you talk us through your formation and your team of the season? Who did you pick?
Well, of course, we're taking a glance at that lineup, 3-4-3 formation with Oblak at the back as the keeper. Navas, Ramos, Piqué. Many will criticize me that Navas isn't really a defender. Well, deal with it, okay? In the fantasy teams, he is. So in my book, he is. Midfield with Modric, Banega, Fernando Cazorla, Messi, Benzema, Ocampos in the front. We shouldn't speak about these three because I think it's obvious that they have been absolutely monstrous this season. Monster of a players. Modric did very well. Fernando has been amazing for Sevilla, as did Eber Banega, who is leaving this next summer. Also, Cazorla, we talked about him already, massive player. And, well, Ramos and Piqué as the only highlight from Barca alongside Leo Messi. I think Piqué has delivered the goods this year, and he's been one of the single bright spots of that team in this whole 1920 season.
Yeah, Roman, I'm interested actually to see how many Barcelona players you went for. We'll look at your team of the season next. Can you talk us through this?
Well, I have to agree with Paco, you know, 3-4-3 is the best formation for fantasies. I'm going to boast a bit. I was fourth in our LLM league, and so that worked really well for me. I recommend that to all our fans and whoever wants to play next season with us. And I went for Aitor Fernandez in the goal because for Levante, I think he was crucial. He was really consistent, made amazing saves overall. I think he was just one of the best goalkeepers. We could go for Oblak and all the other classics, but I think Aitor deserves a shout out. Then in defense, three at the back with Piqué, Carlos and Estupiñán. Estupiñán, I think, has more physicality than Navas. We have no doubt about that. So I think it makes sense we can put him there in that position. And there in the middle, we have four players with Odegaard, Casemiro, Thomas Partey and Ocampos. Ocampos, I said in there because I couldn't pick any more up front, and I think there were some others who deserved it. And Tomas, I think he was just key for Atletico de Madrid this season. He allowed them to perform well, especially towards the end. Casemiro, I don't think we have to say much about him. He's been incredible all year round. And Odegaard, despite that bad ending to the season, I think he was really impressive for most of it. And up front, Messi had to be there. Benzema had to be there. And the other player I put is Gerard Moreno, who was the best Spanish striker this season. So that's my 3-4-3 for this year's lineup.
Yeah, I really like it. Haas, I have a feeling you'll have quite a lot of Real Madrid in yours.
Just a tad. Anyway, so I've gone with a more orthodox 4-3-3. So I've got Thibaut Courtois in the net. I think that speaks for itself. Samora, winner, sort of solid keeper all throughout the year, and redeemed himself massively despite a sticky start to the season. Got Dani Carvajal, Sergio Ramos, Diego Carlos, and Ferland Mendy at the back. Of course, the Real Madrid players listed in there were all incredible this year. I think Carvajal particularly has had quite a resurgence after a bit of a hit and miss campaign not so long ago. Sergio Ramos, I don't really know what more you need to add to that man. In that sense, 11 goals this season. Just broke the record for 100 club goals, which is insanity. Carlos and Mendy, also two very standout performers. In midfield, I've got Santi Cazorla, Casemiro and Mikel Merino. Mikel Merino, I particularly want to highlight. I think he's been really impressive this year and really turned his reputation around from Newcastle rejects to a standout player in the league. Casemiro, best destroyer on the planet at the moment. Santi Cazorla, Aldi Goldie, we love it. And up front, I have Lucas Ocampos, Karim Benzema, and Lionel Messi. I think those three explain their own positions there, really. I don't need to elaborate too much.
Yeah, I just wonder, Haas, what Rafael Varane ever did to offend you, because you've basically got the entire Real Madrid defence, all the way up to Casemiro and Varane left out. But I do like the team overall. We're going to discuss a little bit now about some of the coaches who actually have to select these teams week in, week out. And we've already mentioned them a little bit. Paco, I'll come to you. You've kind of hinted at your coach of the season. Tell us more.
Well, Diego Martinez, I think his job has been great for Granada. I had the chance of seeing actually Granada in the first match day against Villarreal, an amazing game 4-4 against Villarreal in Estadio La Ceramica. And you could already see those signs that that team had been very, very solid. They had put in a lot of work in order to have the players very involved in that kind of play style, very rock solid at the back with Soldado, Carlos Fernandez, Domingos Duarte, you know, so many quality players. And I think they have remained the whole season, you know, at the back of the eyesight of all the fans. And I think at the end of the day, their prize of getting that seventh place is absolutely deserved. And Diego Martinez, I think, is ready to take up on bigger challenges. I don't know if it will happen next season, but at some point, a big team is going to make a move for him.
Roman, have you got an alternative option for coach of the season, or are you going with Diego Martinez too?
I have to go with Diego Martinez, I think. It's the basic option here. He's been amazing. I mean, Paco said most of it. And when we saw Granada at the beginning of the season, when you looked at their squad, you thought that that team would struggle because, I mean, lots of players were unknown, especially to Primera División, you know, weren't sure what they were capable of doing. But they were so compact, so cohesive with Diego Martinez, and he managed to get the most out of them. And the most important thing is they were consistent. You know, it wasn't just a few flashes of quality. They've been great throughout the whole season, sorry. And so I think he definitely deserves it. Although a shout out for Alguacil, who I think was also great. It's just a pity, you know, that after the break, he just couldn't keep up the momentum. But he was also fantastic with Real Sociedad.
And Haas, who are you going for?
Slightly different choice, just to be different anyway. So I'm going to go with Jose Bordalas, just for the story that he's put out. I mean, when he took over his halfway the position they were in to where he's taken them now, I know they only just narrowly missed out in Europe. But that turnaround he's pulled off with that squad is just utterly incredible. And while it might not be the most sort of pleasing football on the eye for some, I think he's done an incredible job. He's turned them into a really formidable outfit.
Yeah, another good selection. I would go with Sergio at Real Valladolid. I don't think everyone knows they had the very lowest budget this season, but finished all the way up in 13th. So, you know, Ronaldo has a lot of money, but not that much money. So Sergio's done a good job. To be fair, all the coaches who made it to the end of the season have done a good job to avoid the sack race. So now I want to kind of move on to your moments of the season. I want two moments from you each, okay? I want a moment that you thought was the best footballistically, a great goal, a great piece of skill or something that sticks out in your memory, and then also a personal moment from the season. So I'm going to go for Adderis and his overhead kick right on opening night, because that was just something brilliant in his final season. And then a personal moment, I really enjoyed being at Mendizorroza for Alaves versus Eibar when Oliver Burke scored, becoming the first Scottish player to score in La Liga in my lifetime since 1987. So that was quite nice to be there for that one, and to then hear the terrible pronunciation of his name as they started chanting his name. Paco, let's go to you. What moments stick out for you?
Well, football-wise, I have to speak about Morales' incredible goal against Real Madrid and beating Real Madrid back in February 2020 in a game which Levante traditionally have always controlled against Real Madrid and Barca. This time, Real Madrid were the ones to kneel and yield against Levante. And if we have to speak about a personal moment this season, obviously, I have to speak about a bad memory, and it happened back in September 11th, 2019, when Valencia released an official statement saying that Marcelino García Toral was sacked, and we already knew that a few weeks later, Matteo Alemany would follow suit, because it was the beginning of the end for a team of legend, Valencia, which were able to beat Barca back in the day in the Copa del Rey, and we already knew that it would dismember and disband when a few months went later, and it is going to happen next summer. So that point in time, September 11th, 2019, was the worst memory, worst personal moment of this season for me.
Roman, what about you? Do you have a slightly happier memory?
Well, my best personal moment this season, I think, has to be Bruno Soriano's return after that really horrible injury. He's had so many years trying to fight to get back to a football stadium, and finally he managed. It's a pity that the fans weren't there to see it, to applaud him, to you know, to cry with him, because it was a very emotional moment. And I've personally followed Bruno Soriano a lot. I really liked him as a player. He managed to play a few times with the national side. I thought he had a lot of future there, but unfortunately, it didn't work out because of the injury. So we lost a player that could have been fantastic. And in the end, at least, he just retired. He got to say goodbye, and he proved to everyone that he was going to come back no matter what, and he did it. And on the other hand, the most impressive moment for me has to be Joaquin's hat-trick. I mean, 38 years old against Atleti de Bilbao. He scored it in barely 20 minutes. I mean, that was so impressive. And when I saw that on TV, I was like, has this really happened? But yes, Joaquin scored a hat trick with 38. And by the way, today's his birthday. He's 39. Incredible, Joaquin.
Yeah, happy birthday to Joaquin. I hope he's spending it watching along with everyone on this La Liga Lowdown Live. We're getting towards the end of it. Haas, what about your moments?
So my sort of personal moment of the year was Vinicius' goal in El Clasico. Considering all the sort of beatings he takes online for his lack of end product, and I know it was a somewhat lucky deflected goal, it was more the intent, the moment, and the vindication of him. He's always been a good player in those big games, so to see him get that moment was truly magnificent. And the moment that sort of I enjoyed quite a lot was Ødegaard's assist to Oyarzabal against Alaves. What a ball that was. Just I can still see it in my mind, like just replaying and replaying and replaying.
Yeah, I think I'm going to look that one up again later, because I do kind of remember that one. Memory's a bit blurry because it has been a long season. A lot of what we've talked about happened a long time ago, but the season is completed, and that comes to the end as well of this La Liga Lowdown Live. The second one we've done, I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you've been commenting along, criticising everybody's team of the season. I hope to see lots of that when I take a look later. Thanks just to everybody who's followed us this season. It's been a big season for everyone here. We've had a lot of podcasts, 7 to 8 podcasts, lots of videos on Twitter. We launched a website this year, lots of articles going up there. So thanks to everyone who supported us. Thanks to all the guests today. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at La Liga Lowdown to find out what's coming up next, what's going on over the summer, and our plans for next season. For now, thank you very much.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.